You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one podcast in all things marketing, advertising, and communications. I'm your host, Ted Lau, podcast host, award-winning agency owner, and full-time family guy. Today on the show, we have Katrina German, who is an award-winning entrepreneur specializing in communications, technology, and digital strategy. As the CEO and founder of ethicaldigital.ca, Katrina and her team are changing the trajectory of the internet through digital strategy, research, and certification. Katrina has recently been included in Future for Good's 2022 Social Good Founders to Watch, has won the YWCA Women of Distinction Award for Entrepreneurship, Startup Canada Prairie Award for Innovation, and has won the prestigious International Women in Tech Award for Women in Communications. Katrina is a strong believer in measured results, radical creativity, and using technology to improve workflow. Katrina, welcome.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so you're from the prairies, eh? So how's, are you in Saskatchewan? Where are you?
I'm based here in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Our team is across Canada, though. We have people in cities everywhere.
Oh, that's nice. That's great. I haven't been to the prairies, but I hear it's quite lovely in the summer.
Come in the summer, don't come in the winter.
Don't come in the winter. Yeah, I've heard. All right, so we always start off our interviews with just a little bit of a origin story. So if you could tell us a little bit about who you are, how you got here, and how you won all those darn awards. That's a lot of them.
Thank you. Well, I guess I've always been a social impact entrepreneur. Even when I had regular jobs in nonprofits, I often had side hustles where I was doing video production or writing books or whatever the case may be. So I've always been interested in communicating and sharing ideas with a large audience. And in the early days of Twitter, I kind of started to see, I was like, wait, I think I can see how I can make things trend. And so I'd started playing a little bit with some other businesses, and we were able to reach thousands of people in one day on Twitter. I was just like, oh yeah, I can see how this works. So I really kind of got hooked on just the ability to reach a lot of different people using that forum. And so started to kind of get into bigger campaigns where one of them, my past career had been in adult literacy and teaching adults and families, you know, some of the early skills of reading and writing. And so I partnered with our old organization, as well as Post Media, who does all the kind of major newspapers across Canada. And we had one of the first hashtags on their front page of newspapers across Canada. We're called Raise a Reader. And basically, we could actually see as everybody was waking up and opening their papers across Canada, we watched that trend across Canada with the idea for people to read to their kids. And I was just absolutely hooked. We reached 2.4 million people in one day. This was way back in the day. That was a lot of people back then.
And, so a lot of people still
and
now.
It was just Yeah. And it was a really, really kind of exciting thing. So I was absolutely hooked on what you could be doing in order to harness the power of digital marketing in order to get, you know, change people's mindsets and make people healthier. And so I eventually was telling that story, actually, of that campaign at a tech conference. And my former business partner approached me and he said, listen, we're both social impact entrepreneurs. Why don't I build something, you can sell it. And, you know, so we beer stormed our way through some ideas and basically came to the idea of a company we created called One Story, where it was gathering people's stories from around the world. It was basically crowdsourcing stories. So this was even before Facebook Live, any of that kind of stuff. And I was really kind of solving the problem of like, why is creating videos so darn hard, especially for social media? Like, you need a lot more content. And so our platform would actually allow organizations from around the world to ask questions and then get video responses in return, at which point those video responses would be automatically stitched together into a little mini documentary. So it was kind of a cool process, basically, to crowdsource video. And I was able to work with some of the best communications people from change organizations from around the world. So we worked with United Nations Women to tell the stories of men standing up for women's rights in Albania, you know, talking about homelessness with the Salvation Army, why we support veterans with PGA Golf Canada. So it was a really incredible life experience where, you know, I got really involved. We raised funds and we were one of the top 15 startups in Canada. You know, I started to see some of the inequalities that were going on in the spaces as well. And so unfortunately that company didn't make it, but it was a really cool life experience. And I really started to see some of the power of things that were going on in the digital space and what, you know, what this meant for our future. So as I was sort of catching my breath after that tech company, I worked for Innovation Saskatchewan for a year. And this is before we had any tech accelerators here in the province. And so I was able to help 70 different companies get to commercialization and really enjoyed that process, but really realized that a lot of the people had really cool technologies that they were creating, but weren't really sure how to use the digital space to connect with their audiences and test their audiences and find the right messages. And because of all the work and travel I had done with my startup and connecting with other, you know, the technology world, particularly at that time, were some of the best marketers in the world because they were right there on the front lines and I got to learn from them. I turned that information into a book called Action Tracking, and basically it was sort of just to get some of the things out of my brain out into the world. But I ended up sort of accidentally starting the agency, because after I wrote that book, I had a lot of people approaching me to work with them. And you know, we were just getting started at the beginning of COVID, and we'd gone down to two people, and by the end of, you know, within 2 years, we were at 18 people. It was really quite a growth, because, you know, it was the time when everybody was deciding to go online. But I was in the position where I was looking at it. I was concerned about what was happening online, just the different types of conversations that were going on. Trump was at his peak. There was a lot of mask versus anti-mask, you know, just a lot of anger online too, because everybody was going there over their pandemic. I was like, this cannot be good for people. So to be honest, I started to get kind of concerned. I was like, are we the next tobacco company by being a social media company? And so I wanted to study this and understand what the impact of, you know, what we were doing and creating online and what that meant for people. So it was right around that time that we rebranded and moved everything into our concept of ethical digital. And so that's our agency right now. And we are trying to change the trajectory of the internet. So the core of our business is digital marketing strategy. So social media, websites, email strategies that not only convert, that's always important to anything you're creating, but also are inclusive and taking care of people with different disabilities, mental health issues, low literacy skills, that sort of things. So really enjoy that work and putting some positivity and education into the internet and creating that. But I also wanted to do further. So we partner with academic institutions from around Canada to create research. So we've worked on how social media affects well-being. So spoiler alert, there's absolutely a correlation between social media use, anxiety, depression, self-esteem, body image, image issues, sleep issues. When we first started the research, there was a lot of talk about it being sort of correlations. But as more research is happening, we're starting to see that a lot of that is moving into causation, and that social media is actually having a really strong impact on humans. We've also researched how to get more Indigenous women involved in technology development. We have very few women, Indigenous women represented in Canada in that space. And if technology is the future, we need all people involved in creating that future. And we've also researched with the Diversity Institute how to get more women into venture capital, which also funds the internet. And women-led technology companies actually have received around 2% of the billions of dollars that have gone into the internet. So that's it. So we kind of have a philosophy that if we can adjust the makeup of people who are actually, you know, creating those deals, that we, you know, and have more women involved in the venture capital space, that we might see some more women-led projects and women-led problems being solved using technology as a tool. So we take then all that research and turn it into corporate training to get it out in the world and get people changing minds. So we've got a big corporate training out there too right now around how social media affects well-being, and specifically in the areas of mental health and productivity.
Okay, well, that's a mouthful. There's a lot there. So let's unpack that a little. So I heard book writing, social media, and is the next tobacco possibly, and all the research and development that you're doing around women's issues and Indigenous women's issues. So maybe let's start with the technology and the social media. So social media, is it the next tobacco? Because I think everyone's on there, and absolutely, I think they're, with everything, there needs to be moderation. But is it as bad? Am I going to get cancer or lung cancer? Or maybe it's just I guess depression is also severe. So what does the research say? Do we just turn off the computers and see you later? Or what are we supposed to do?
Well, a lot of the health experts, this is going to blow your mind, but especially the profession you work in, but they say that you should be spending less than half an hour a day on social media. And the average Canadian is spending about 2.5 hours a day on social media. And so there's, you know, you look at that in different ways. You know, there's sort of extreme things. And there's also so many good things and connection points that do happen on social media. So we don't want to come out and say, you know, the sky is falling. But there's also some very significant things that we need to be looking at. You know, we're part of a giant experiment of something that's never been done before. And we need to be quite aware of some of the pitfalls of it. So when it comes to depression, for example, a lot of people will go to social media to try to kind of make themselves feel better. They want that dopamine hit, you know, of putting something out there, having a connection with people. And that's what we have to remember, is that a majority of this is really about connection with others. And, you know, if they get that feeling back, if they get people responding and saying like, hey, good job, or, you know, or just responding and having that connection point, it can really help raise their feelings and make them feel better. However, a lot of times, you know, the social media, you know, it could be tricky. You put something out, you get crickets, right? And so that can actually really contribute to a bad spiral for people, where you're kind of expecting social media to make you feel better, but it actually makes you feel worse because you're not getting the feedback that you need. Anxiety is an interesting one too. Like, we have tons of studies that we've done in all these areas, but there is a really interesting area, and we talk about this quite a bit, is around the idea of FOMO, the fear of missing out. And so, you know, coming out of the pandemic, we're at all-time high levels of anxiety in our population of all ages, you know, adults and teenagers. But marketing, you know, which is just a very common marketing tool, is using FOMO, you know, like, get your tickets now, get it, you know, by 3 days left, you know, get them by Friday or you're out, kind of thing. That actually can cause undue pressure on people who suffer from anxiety that isn't really required. You, yes, it's a good, you know, marketing technique, but, you know, we've actually done some testing and found that you can put the same types of marketing information out without having that FOMO, and kind of making it more inclusive and sort of being like, you know, almost, we always, you know, encourage JOMO, the joy of missing out, of not being online. But you know, the idea with the FOMO side is that, you know, you just have to be a bit more creative from your marketing side for putting out those messages, and then you're not actually impacting assisting those who are suffering from anxiety. And so really, you know, kind of saying like, join us today, you know, like there are 5 spots left, instead of sort of using it from a get it now, you know, kind of doing it like, hey, you have time. It does close on Friday, just so you know. But in the meantime, it can be just as effective to avoid FOMO. And you know, I'm saying from a marketing perspective for those who are professional digital marketers, you know, that's just something to be considering. Yes, it's an effective tool, but what are we doing to people when we do it? And, you know, we want to, if we can be making slight adjustments to our language and the way that we are marketing online, I think we'll be overall protecting our industry a little bit more, and making sure that people, you know, continue in some forms to trust the internet a little bit for their information.
Well, so there's a few things I want to also unpack there. I think, yeah. I think we're going down this rabbit hole of a conversation here, right? Yeah. There. So a few things. So look, my business is a company called Ballistic Arts, and we've been in business 21 years. I started as a creative agency. So we did video production, web development, you know, graphic design stuff, but it was mostly all creative. And only, I want to say 5 years ago, did we get into social media marketing, because a lot of our clients wanted us, and it was like social digital marketing, a lot of lead gen, the stuff that you're talking about now. And quite frankly, I myself am not, if you're ever trying to find me on social, the only place I'm in is on LinkedIn. I'm basically not that active on any of the other platforms. That said, so me myself, not a big user of social media, but your points around anxiety, FOMO, those kinds of things have, in my experience, and, you know, grew up in the 80s where, you know, TV, radio, all that kind of stuff existed. And I studied a lot of comms. And so I'm wondering, is it really, you know, as Marshall McLuhan, who I think is a prairie man, said, you know, the medium is the message. But I kind of feel like, well, you know, War of the Worlds with radio, people thought, oh my God, like when Orson Welles did that, like Mars was attacking us. Or, you know, there was a big in the 80s, and I'm sure there still is, young people having eating disorders because they were reading these magazines, watching these billboards, Calvin Klein, and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And is it not just more of the same? It's just a different medium that we're combating. And so we're looking at putting a Band-Aid on the symptom as opposed to looking at the root cause, which I believe is more around media literacy. Because if I believe you have somebody that is, I don't know, literate, as like, okay, well, you know what? This is just a picture. It's been Photoshopped and all that kind of stuff. And it's for selling advertising. But, you know, I still like those shoes. Like, then you're going to maybe have a different viewpoint. And so I would think, is there a role to be played with media literacy as opposed to saying, well, the medium itself is problematic? Because I feel like in my short time on this planet, the messaging has been more or less the same. Sure, it's less prevalent, but I mean, I sat in front of the, you know, the whole term of a couch potato, like came home from school 3 o'clock till like 9 o'clock, just be watching television, you know? And yep. So there's people like that. So what are your thoughts there?
I love that, because I actually think, you know, you touched on a lot of points that I think are really important. That digital literacy side is very important, and having that education and awareness. And it's interesting because one of the studies that we saw, which really got me thinking about this in a different way, was there was a whole bunch of students who had been diagnosed already with, you know, sleep disorders, anxiety, that sort of thing. They've already been diagnosed, but they were brought together to talk about social media. And 100% of them says, oh yeah, social media causes those problems. And 100% of them say, but not for me. And so it's a really interesting thing that we're living in right now. And, you know, I was the same way as you. I still am. I relax to television. You know, I am a media consumer. That's what probably caused me to enjoy my work in digital marketing so much. But the issue is actually how smart a lot of the algorithms and different platforms we are dealing with are. This isn't the same as like a magazine, which can sort of give you, you know, you maybe open it up and you see somebody who looks thin and it gives you sort of a, you know, a shot of like, oh, that's what I should look like, you know, that kind of thing. It's a very slow process. process that's actually, we're all kind of unconscious of, even digital marketers, where it's actually changing the way that we think. It's changing, here's what's supposed to give me happiness. And it's not like there's somebody sitting there and going, wah-ha-ha-ha, you know, I'm going to make Katrina think that she needs to buy this.
So Mark Zuckerberg is not actually a lizard person exactly. doing this, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I need to make
Katrina
think. I
totally read somewhere on Reddit that he is.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought that was real.
And so really it's about, and you know, we have to think about us as humans, and it's honestly, it's dopamine, right? It's that hit. We're always chasing that thing. And social media and the way it's actually even structured is very similar to gambling. You can actually see that it changes the brain and spurs the brain in similar ways. And images and such can really stimulate happiness things in our brain. So the challenge is that when it comes to that is it's not just that we've all decided this is okay because we're selling people things in marketing. It's also that this is actually a very, very, very powerful tool that even the most, you know, people, even myself who studies this, we're still vulnerable to this tool. So agreed that the digital literacy, like the literacy component, is very important. I think that teenagers should be talking about this. I think parents should be talking about this. I think it should be workplaces, like everybody who's taking care of each other should be talking about just the extra power that comes from the social media marketing. But it's also something too, where I do think that, and I'm a technology person too, I am a strong believer, and I believe, you know, Mark Zuckerberg started this the company with the idea of wanting to make the world a better place, connect people, that sort of thing. But we're now at a stage where we know that there are impacts on people's mental health. It's actually causing teenage girls, and they've had these internal documents that came out last year, the year before, with all the Wall Street Journal. They knew that girls, there, you know, I think it was 13% were suicidal after looking at some things. I can't remember the actual statistics, but Wall Street Journal had that come out. It was very high numbers, and they knew that some of their products were causing people to be suicidal because of just the power of what they're putting out. And so, and even things like TikTok, like there's just a recent study that came out that a lot of teenagers who join will see images of cutting and body image issues within 4 minutes of being on the platform. And so there's a lot of things there that, you know, are even more powerful than, say, running into something in a magazine. There's very little oversight on some of these really important topics. And it's also something that we're getting to this point now where it's several years old. These companies, these social media companies, have the money, they have the expertise, they have the data, and they have the ability to experiment to try to be overcoming some of these issues. There's a lot of companies out there, for example, we wrote an op-ed for the Toronto Star that, or Star or Sun, whichever the good one is, that was...
this has not been sponsored by
either. Yeah, exactly. So, you know. Where we were talking about, how to hold these social media companies accountable, because if you've, you know, most of us here have tried to reach out to Facebook to be like, hey, can you adjust this thing, or we've had a problem, and it's impossible really as a user to truly connect with these large organizations. We're actually even seeing countries, you know, Canada's in a big war right now with Meta in terms of, you know, who's more powerful. And so I really feel like the way to be approaching a lot of this too is with corporate law and holding board of directors accountable for some of the bad things that are coming out of these products. If you had a company, I'll use an electrical company for example, and someone was falling in a dam and you're like, well, we had the fence there, we knew it was kind of a problem, but you know, we just didn't get to it, you know, that's a major problem. The board of directors is accountable for not keeping something safe. And so I really think that we should be putting some pressure in that space on the board of directors and using corporate law as a way to be saying like, hey, you know, yes, you're doing good in the world. Yes, you're bringing a lot of economic value, and yes, you're very powerful, but you have to ensure that this platform is good for humans, because it is having a really strong effect on democracy, on people's mental health, and on the way that people are engaging as families. You know, there's still some people who won't talk to each other because of the COVID debates and some of the fights they had online, right? Mm-hmm. This is actually something that's having an effect in our day-to-day lives. And I do think that those companies have a different level of accountability now that they're so large, many of them, to actually be responding to this and at least trying every single day to be making it better and experimenting to ensure that what we're doing is good for people. And I also think as marketers, we have a responsibility to do that too, and to protect our well-being and protect our industry, really.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right. Well, you know, we could talk about this particular topic for the rest of the show, but we have a few other things I wanted to tackle here. You mentioned that you're also doing research to support women in technology. Oh, sorry, Indigenous women in technology. And then other, just women in general in the venture capitalist space. So it is true, you know, we just as business owners, we see a lot of business people. We don't see a whole lot of women-led venture capitalists, and we certainly don't see a lot of Indigenous women or Indigenous people, quite frankly, in technology. And so maybe we'll tackle the Indigenous conversation first. So I had the pleasure to go to a number of Indigenous conferences. Most recently in Vancouver was the Indigenous Success and Prosperity. No, the Indigenous Prosperity Success Showcase. Nice. And they had Indigenous leaders from all over the country come and speak and whatnot. And I remember, you know, there in my conversation, there were definitely a lot more nations and leaders that were coming and becoming much more economically secure, mm-hmm. maybe is a great way of saying it. But something that I would ask sometimes, you know, what is the biggest challenge in your nation? And there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of nations across Canada. And a lot of them say, like, for us to get economic reconciliation, the number one hurdle is we don't have internet.
Yeah.
Like, it is dial-up still in some of these remote rural areas, just even in British Columbia here and in on the West Coast here. And so how, like, this seems like a very large issue, given they are, what, when did I get dial-up? 1995? Yeah. So that was a long time ago. And that was late, I think. My parents are cheap. So, you know, that's a long time ago. So what can we do to provide that level playing field?
And, you know, access to internet and that digital divide is massive. And I do think that there is some, you know, federal initiatives that are going on to ensure people get access. I also think some of the technology developments that are going on will also help, you know, in terms of having satellite access to internet, that sort of thing. So I am hopeful that there's enough initiatives going on, because there, you know, there's a very clear answers out there that, you know, you need to have access or you're going to be falling behind the society. Second to part to that is we interviewed 123 women on and off reserve to find out just what their experiences were with technology, because here in Saskatchewan, our population is 16% Indigenous. And from the tech community, even though we're the second fastest growing next to Waterloo here in Saskatoon, we just still, you know, we had a couple of representatives from the Indigenous community, but very, very few. And I used to run a group for women, actually, women founders here in the province. And we had women from all different geographies around the province, rural, urban. We also had women of different ages, a lot of different cultural backgrounds. We just didn't have anybody go through those groups that identified as Indigenous. So I was like, you know, the internet is the future. What can we be doing to ensuring that all people have access to creating that future? And so we got a grant from Women and Gender Equality Canada, and we're able to interview 123 women on and off reserve, you know, about their experiences and, you know, sort of what their mindset was, you know, what was preventing them from getting involved in technology. And, you know, there's sort of this idea in technology that if you can't see it, you can't be it, you know? And so we're like, well, maybe we need to have more, you know, women mentors going to speak at schools or something like that, or, you know, just trying to get people more excited. But we really discovered that a majority of the women, I think it was like 76%, something in there, knew people who worked in technology. So that wasn't the issue. So that really challenged, you know, sort of some of our assumptions going into that study. What we did discover is a majority of people feel either that they don't have the skills to work in technology, they maybe don't have the money to access the skills that they want. They also have family obligations. They don't want to leave their communities. And, you know, especially several of the communities here in Saskatchewan, you know, the woman often has the role of daughter, you know, sister, family member first. And so that often, you know, didn't, and mother, and didn't really, you know, maybe transpire to that personal, those personal goals of, you know, reaching and creating technology. So we are doing a lot. We're working with partners everywhere. We're holding a hackathon on this fall, just to introduce some more Indigenous women in, and into the tech community. And, you know, a lot of times, as with most jobs, those, you know, a lot of those jobs happen because you know somebody, and you don't necessarily have to have the skills that people think. Like, you don't have to be a developer to get into technology. There's like marketing jobs, there's, you know, financial jobs that are specific to tech, there's, you know, just, you know, if you're a graphic designer, like there's just there's so many different things that technology companies need, the same as others. But, you know, it actually, for me, I started a technology company because I was a single parent at that time, and it gave me the freedom to work around my kids' schedules. And so I'd love, you know, for others to see and recognize those opportunities too, as they're working in that space. So, yeah, just really an interesting space. I think, you know, we're hopeful to have some significant change even by the end of this year in terms of the number of Indigenous women represented in the Saskatchewan tech scene. We're also sharing a lot of our results across Canada, just so that other groups can be, you know, learning, putting it into tech accelerators and incubators, to try to just, encourage and entice more Indigenous women to get involved, because I just think it's very, very important. Technology's here to be solving problems for people, and, you know, different communities are not having their problems solved because they just don't have the same access to creating technology and funding and all that kind of stuff. And so we need to be actively making sure that, you know, at least everybody has the same chance to try and to start those projects.
So tell us about the hackathon just a little bit. Let's plug that before we go. So is it open to everybody? Is it just folks in Saskatchewan, rural Saskatchewan, Indigenous? Like, where is it? When is it? How do we get access?
In this case, and we're still setting up the date, but it'll be in October of 2023. And you will need to be in Saskatchewan for that one, but we'll make everything accessible. If you want to host something like this across Canada, we can give you all of our planning documents and everything, because it's very important. But we are working with Reconciliation Saskatoon and many different Indigenous partners. We have Alina, who's on my team, an incredibly strong Indigenous woman from By Regina, who's leading the whole charge and really starting a massive conversation connecting tech and Indigenous communities. And I think that's always the first step, is how can we build relationships, start to understand some of our important differences, but also how to work together in a way to make some real magic happen.
Where do we go? Do we go to the Reconciliation Saskatchewan website, Ethical Digital? Where
you can check it all out on the Ethical Digital website. We're still getting everything up. We're a little bit early, but we'll be having it up by the end of this month. And just go to the Indigenous Women in Tech section of our website, and you'll be able to find several different resources there.
Okay, so I do want to ask a couple of more questions before we get to the rapid fire, just because I think it's a very interesting conversation. I guess, you know, we started the conversation with, you know, there are some dangers inherently built in social media and technology. Yet on the other end of the conversation, you're trying to get other folks that don't have access to technology into technology. So how are you squaring that circle? Because it seems, you know, I know it's not this crass, but it seems like, hey, tobacco's bad, but how do we get people smoking?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how I'm hearing it. And so maybe please enlighten me, because I must be missing something.
I really believe that diversity of thought makes a better product. And so having more people creating and having different ways of approaching projects, technology products, communications products online, to really connect with people in a different way. And honestly, there seems to be a lot more themes of a lot more women or social impact entrepreneurs are trying to do more for the community and community building rather than some of the other motivations online. And so I think there's just an opportunity. And so that's the big thing for me, is it's really about the idea of getting people at least to the same starting point, where we all have the same thing. You know, you have to, you know, starting a tech company, you know, being involved in marketing, it's not easy. You have to have, you know, some gumption, some passion, some interest, some skills to do it. But at this point, not everybody even has to start. And so that's kind of where it boils down to for me, is that I believe, you know, the internet's a great place. You know, I think the 1986-ish was when it sort of became out there, and it's been growing.
When Al Gore invented it, right? I think Al Gore
was that right? Was that what happened? Yeah. But it's really only been around for a very short period of time, and it really developed out of a certain, you know, population of people who really thought in a certain way. And so it's now become a global movement, and we need to diversify the number of people who are contributing to it, because I believe in the long run we'll have a different online experience if we have more people creating products, and again, people who are really thinking about what's good for the communities, what's good for human beings, what's good for, you know, young people, different things like that, as these different products get created. So that's basically how I square it, is the idea that right now what's been built is excellent. Again, there's a lot of amazing things that are happening online. I like the Wild West of things, and, you know, people being able to just have a full creativity of, you know, creating something online that represents, you know, something that they believe that they can change in the world. But I also think that it's such a powerful force that we do need to do some things to make sure that, number one, the stuff that is being created is going to be okay for some of our systems. Like, you know, our society is changing rapidly because of this online change. You know, what are some of the things that we should be thinking about to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves and some of the core structures of our society, but also what can we be doing to use this tool to make us better, you know, to connect in different ways and lift and elevate us in terms of, you know, educating each other, connecting each other, making each other feel like we have, you know, a positive future together. And so that's how I square it up, essentially, is we need more diverse voices creating the space and contributing content and tech company, you know, and tech, you know, products and solutions. But we also need to be very aware and have this conscious creation of technology that, you know, there can be some impacts, but it's important for us to not just be like, well, that's how it is. What we have to actually, if we're having some impacts that are not good for people, we can't just let it run rampant. We have to be looking at this seriously, acknowledging the issue, and then trying to make changes that can eventually make it, you know, sort of the utopia that we're, you know, that online that are meeting people's needs.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great goal to have safeguards, because, you know, even, you know, we all wear clothes, but I also remember in the 90s when, you know, the whole sweatshop labor thing was a thing, and, you know, well, how are we going to do this? But we still need to have safeguards for humans, because at the end of the day, we live here. And so I guess my last question before the rapid fire thing is that from a timing perspective, right? Like, again, a lot of these communities are just getting introduced to the internet.
Yeah.
The internet's, you know, at least from a popularity standpoint, has been at least, what, 30 some odd years around. So how do we pull forward that for these folks? Because technically they're starting 30 years behind. So Is that going to be a hurdle? I'm assuming it is. And if so, how are you going to pull them forward quickly? Kind of like the pandemic. No one was on video chat before. Skype had been around for 15 years or something like that, but no one used it. And then all of a sudden, we can't, you know, do business. Let's go. And I don't know, there's this thing called Zoom. And then all of a sudden we've just pulled forward. Remote work is a thing now. How are you going to do that from an indigenous community standpoint to get them to today's level of use for technology?
Yeah, I think, you know, ultimately, it's not a problem that's going to solve itself overnight, but it is something that I think that we're well positioned for right now to make some change and to get started. And it'll be something that'll evolve. It'll be something that's going to take some time to get there. But if we're not starting, we're never going to get there. Best time to plant a tree 10 years ago, second best time today. And so I think really addressing this, I also think, you know, we need to be allies and working with communities, you know, to help them solve problems from their own perspective, go through processes that, you know, work within, you know, different cultural approaches. And I think ultimately, you know, just providing access to opportunity is one of the best things that we can be doing. And, you know, I guess there's probably about four or five different approaches I think are important to make these things happen and actually have some effect. One of the cool things, though, is we're in Saskatchewan, which has a small population. We can get things done quickly here. So we're going to try it. We're going to take a run in this province and then hopefully have a model for other provinces to look at as well.
All right. That's fantastic. And, you know, like you said, I also agree. I have many folks that I mentor and coach along the way. And those always feel like, oh, well, I didn't get quite, you know, I haven't started. I should have started, you know, 5-10 years ago. Well, you know what? Not starting today is just going to make it worse. So you might as well get started. Right. So I think that's a really great attitude and, you know, good on you for leading the charge there. So with regards to rapid fire, let's get to know Katrina a little bit. So I'm going to ask a bunch of questions. They're fun, loving, hopefully. And, you know, just first thing come out of your head, you know, you answer. All right.
Sounds good.
Oppenheimer or Barbie?
I haven't seen either. I think
neither.
I don't. That's good to know. I actually want to see both. Yeah, I think I'll maybe just try a big session one weekend and just go through. I feel terrible, though, because I'm watching it all unfold from online. But it looks like people are having fun in both areas.
Yeah, my staff are having a field day. Great. Dark or milk chocolate?
Dark. Yeah, if you're going to have chocolate, punch me in the face with the chocolate. Give me that flavor.
How dark?
Yeah.
How dark? 80, 90, 100?
You know what? Let's go 80. I don't want to get too far. Like, I don't want it to be like cooking chocolate. But the ones I kind of like the very best is when they have the jalapeno chocolate in there. Ooh, a little bit of sweet and spicy. I love that.
Oh, yummy, yummy. All right. And then favorite children's book?
Oh, Love You Forever by Robert Munsch. Yeah, you have to... it has a whole song and everything, and honestly, no parent can make it through without crying. I still cry when I get to certain parts of it.
Who did you watch in the 80s growing up? Mr. Dress Up? Was it Sesame Street? The Muppets?
I think I did it all. Also the Fraggles. We can't forget the Canadian Fraggles.
I stumbled. Like, what were they called again? Yeah. Fraggle Rock.
Yeah, Fraggle Rock. Yeah, no, I was definitely, Fraggle Rock was first. In fact, I have a little record that I still listen to sometimes with the opening credit song. I just love that Fraggle Rock classic. And just a small story, I actually got to meet Mr. Dressup when I was about 6. So no big deal, but I have a picture, and yeah, I'm pretty sure he always remembers that.
Did you get to meet Casey and Finnegan?
They weren't there. It turns out, they traveled separately, I guess.
They travel separately. They travel first class.
Yeah, that's right.
In their box. Night owl or early bird?
Night owl. I'd prefer, I think if I had my ideal life, I'd be up until about 2, up at about 10. But I have teenagers and businesses. And so it turns out
teenagers, from what I understand, when my teenage life, I was like a 4 to noon kind of.
Yeah,
kind
no,
of
that's sleep. Probably them so. Too. But I got to go to the school, all that kind of stuff. So life has made me a bit of an early bird. But as soon as I retire, I'm back to it. Late nights. Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of a mom who's running multiple businesses, any life hack that you would want to share?
Great technology. I use ClickUp as just project management. So I even put all my personal stuff that I've got to do in there. Just so basically have an ongoing to-do list that my team can also see. And also that's the second part, having a great team, like really working with people who are just solid. My team is fantastic.
All right. Okay. Well, so, you know, this is a great interview today, Katrina. I'm really happy to have you here and had the opportunity to listen to some of your thoughts, and it helped me kind of see the world a little bit differently. So thank you very much for your time. How do we get a hold of you?
You can find me at katrinagerman.com, at ethicaldigital.ca. I'm on pretty much all the social media platforms. I'm the same as you. I love LinkedIn. Let's connect there. And hopefully you'll just be seeing media and all sorts of just information coming out that you will grasp and share about how to
make only for 30 better. Minutes a day.
Right? Only for 30 minutes a day. Only for 30 minutes a day. That's right.
All right, Katrina. Well, thank you very much for your time. Everybody, thank you for listening. This was Ted Lau and Katrina German talking about media literacy. Can't even pronounce it. And all sorts of good things. Check it out, ethicaldigital.ca. Thanks, everyone, for your time. We'll see you again.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded at the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editor, Travis Jeffers.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.